Hello, everybody. My name is Barnabas Hasprey, but you can call me Barney. I grew up in Basingstoke, going to churches in the Forge network. Dan and I have been friends for most of our lives, actually. And Dan may not remember this, but the last time I gave a sermon at a church in Basingstoke was 15 years ago when Dan also invited me to speak at what was then East Church on the Book of Micah. So I don't know if the fact that he invited me back 15 years later means that I did a good job or a bad job, but it's a great honor to be able to speak again. I'm very passionate about the topic I'm going to talk to you about, which is why Jesus was a refugee. But before I start talking, I like to start all of my talks with this prayer. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. I pray that my words will point rightly to the God who created us all and who loves us all beyond words. Now, the topic is why Jesus was a refugee, and there's a passage that I want to focus basically entirely on for this session. It's in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 2, and we'll start by reading it. So it says, "An angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, 'Rise and take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him.' And he arose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, 'Out of Egypt I called my son.'" Now, what I'm going to try and argue in this sermon is that Jesus, being a refugee, fleeing to Egypt with his mother and adoptive father, was not an accident or a happenstance, but it was something that God had ordained because it was necessary that Jesus be in the category of refugee in order for him to be our saviour. I should note, though, that this isn't an especially new argument in the context of Christian history. The idea of the flight to Egypt as a crucial part of the story of Jesus has been obsessed over by people throughout Christian history, and there's so many paintings of it. So, for example, this is a Carpaccio painting called The Flight into Egypt, painted around 1515, so 2 years before the beginning of the Reformation. And you can see how it depicts Mary and baby Jesus, or toddler Jesus by then, with Joseph pulling the donkey along. Joachim Patinir, who's actually one of the seminal figures in the landscape painting movement, he's one of the first people who painted landscapes in the fashion that then became very widespread and well known later on. Here he is painting the flight into Egypt. That's what he calls it. You can see Mary and Joseph are very small in the distance there. This gives you a sense of perspective. Here's a painting that you can find in the British Museum, Gentileschi, Rest on the Flight to Egypt. It shows Joseph absolutely exhausted, laid flat out on the big pack he's been carrying, and Mary breastfeeding Jesus. There's a lot that could be said about these paintings. It's not just European art, though, that is interested in the idea of the Holy Family as refugees. We find Chinese art that depicts Mary, Joseph, and Jesus as Chinese refugees. And then you have very modern art that depicts Mary and Joseph and Jesus as the kinds of refugees that we see today in the Western world, refugees coming from places like Syria and Eritrea and Venezuela, refugees who are very familiar to all of us by now. But the question is, why was Jesus a refugee? Now, I came to ask this question because I found references to Jesus being a refugee in all of the Christian literature about refugees that I could find. Every Christian charity to do with refugees or Christian social justice charity liked to reference that Jesus was a refugee, but they always talked about it as if the idea was sort of self-evident, as if everybody should understand what that means. They never sort of expanded on the idea, apart from one or two places where they would say, well, that's why refugees can identify with Jesus specially, or something like that. But I found myself thinking there must be more to it than that. And so these are my meditations. I'm going to give three meditations on why Jesus was a refugee from a sort of exegetical perspective, and then I'm going to switch from exegesis to application and ask what we can learn from the idea of Jesus being a refugee to affect our lives today, including our relationship to refugees. So my first point, Jesus was a refugee because the people of God are refugees. Now, I want to focus on the last little bit of that Matthew passage that I looked at. It says, this was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. But what kind of a prophecy is that? Well, you find it in the book of Hosea, chapter 11, 1 to 2. It says, when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. The more they were called, the more they went away. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning offerings to idols. Now, I don't know about you, but there seems to be something strange. I certainly noticed something strange about this when I first looked at it, is that this isn't actually a prophecy. It's not predicting the future, not the way we normally think of as prophecy, right? I mean, maybe you guys have been well trained enough by Dan in biblical theology that you know that prophecy is more than just predicting the future. Prophecy is a divine perspective on events. And in that sense, this is a prophecy, but it's still talking about the past. It's still recounting past events. So in what sense can we say that it was something that needed to be fulfilled in Jesus? Well, maybe you've been well trained enough in biblical theology by Dan even to know the answer to that. It comes from the theology called the theology of recapitulation, which suggests that Jesus had to recapitulate. He had to rewalk the story of Israel. Why did Jesus have to do that? Well, because as the Messiah, he was the one true representative of Israel. The way the biblical narrative goes, it describes the people of Israel as a people who were called to a particular task, a particular calling on earth. They failed in that calling due to their sin, and as a result, God exiled them. And we'll come back to the exile later, because that's another instance of refugeehood. And Jesus as the Messiah comes as the Savior, because he is to be for the world what Israel failed to be. He is to be the one true Israelite who will succeed where Israel failed. In order to do that, he has to fulfill all the key points in Israel's story, all of the key moments that form Israel's identity. And one of those moments is the exile, the escape from Egypt. The fact that the people of Israel fled slavery in Egypt, which makes them forcibly displaced people, which makes them refugees right from the start, because the definition of a refugee is somebody whose life or freedom or safety is under threat from, that their rights are being violated by the nation that they're currently in, and so they have to leave in order to secure their freedom. That's exactly what happened to the people of Israel. They fled from Egypt in order to secure their freedom. And because that was such a foundational moment in Israel's history and in Israel's life, it was something that the Messiah needed to recapitulate. Of course, there's slight differences to the story. Israel fled from Egypt, but Jesus fled to Egypt. But there's no time to get into the detail of why that difference is there. The important thing is that there is a refugee experience involving Egypt at the very heart of Jesus' story and at the very heart of the story of the people of Israel. In other words, Jesus was displaced in order to fulfill his role as true and faithful representative of Israel, who were also displaced. That's the first reason. The second reason goes even further back in Israel's history, to the story of Abraham. So I want to argue that Jesus was displaced as a sign of continuity with Abraham, who was also displaced. I'm using the word displaced as the verb for being a refugee, right? To be displaced, forcible displacement means when somebody is forced to flee their home country, their homeland, for whatever reason. Now, of course, Abraham was not a refugee when he first left his homeland, because he was responding to God's call, which he had the freedom to reject or disobey, I suppose. So Abraham was not a refugee at the beginning, he was a migrant. This is the key passage here, Genesis 12. It says, now the Lord said to Abraham, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. So Abram went as the Lord had told him. Abram took Sarai his wife and Lot his brother's son and all their possessions that they had gathered, or in the literal Hebrew, all the life that belonged to them, and the people that they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan. But then there comes a moment where it says there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there. The Greek word, not the Greek, the Hebrew word for sojourn there is gur, which is where we get the Hebrew word ger, the closest cognate to refugee in the Hebrew language. So Jesus went, he fled to Egypt, again fleeing to Egypt, because of the famine. Now, modern day definitions of a refugee coming from the United, the UNHCR definition of the refugee from 1951 would not count that as real forced displacement. Famine doesn't count. But I'm broadening the definition of refugee to include anybody who's forcibly displaced for any reason. And I do think that somebody who's fleeing a famine genuinely counts as a refugee just because their rights aren't being violated by the government of the nation that they come from. Now, you might say, okay, sure, Abraham was a refugee, but what's that got to do with the future? Well, the thing is, the people of Israel always saw themselves as constituted by Abraham and as inhabiting Abraham's identity in some way. Abraham was a part of their nature, of who they were, their identity, because he was their founder. And not just the people of Israel, actually. There's three religions in the world today that trace their origins back to Abraham. Or Abraham, and they all see themselves as being formed by the identity of this founding figure. And that means that even after Israel had happily settled in their own land and were living in their own land, they were not refugees anymore, they had their own country, their own territory, and they had lived in it for hundreds of years, God wanted to continually remind them that their origins were that of a refugee, and that they should never see themselves as sort of owning the land outright that they lived in. So we can have a look at a passage in Leviticus, for example, where God says, "The land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine. For you are strangers, gerim, and sojourners, toshavim, with me." The key word there is strangers, gerim. In other words, God wanted the people of Israel to understand themselves as refugees, as foreigners, as exiles, even when they lived in their own land. It's really, really important, and we'll look at why that's important later on. You might say, but didn't God give them this land? And if God gives them the land of Israel, then the land belongs to them. They own the land, right? Well, what does it mean to give? That's the important question. Here's a quotation from one of my favorite Old Testament scholars, Christopher Wright, in his book Old Testament Ethics for the People of God. He talks about the verb to give in relation to the land, and this is what he says about it. The verb natan, normally translated to give, often has the more technical sense of assign, deed, transfer, convey when combined with the land. It was not just an arbitrary and unconditional gift, but a constituent grant that formed part of the total package of their relationship henceforth. Israel's enjoyment of the covenanted gift, therefore, demanded their reciprocal obligations to the covenanting giver. This meant that the land was still Yahweh's land. He retained the ultimate title of ownership and therefore also the ultimate right of moral authority over how it was used. In other words, the land never ceases to belong to God. And because the land never ceases to belong to God, Israel can never claim that the land belongs to them to the extent that they have the right to control who comes in and who comes out. They are stewards of the land. That means that they are supposed to let the people in and let the people out of the land as God would want, not necessarily as they would want. So let's summarize what we've looked at so far. It says, it is embedded in the heart of God's law that his people are to think of themselves as displaced, even during their period of relative territorial stability. And are we, Westerners, not in a period of relative territorial stability? That's the end of my first point. My second point as to why Jesus was a refugee broadens things out even further. Why was Jesus a refugee? We've just said it's because the people of God are refugees. Now we're going to say not just the people of God are refugees, actually all human beings are refugees in some very profound sense. Why are all human beings refugees? Well, very simply, because if being a refugee is a result of being booted out of a place, displaced from where you belong, Adam and Eve are refugees. Of course, that doesn't mean that they weren't supposed to be, that God wasn't correct in kicking them out of the Garden of Eden. All it is to say is that we have lost the primordial relationship of home that we once had to the Garden of Eden. We're not in the Garden of Eden, which is where we are technically from, according to the Genesis story. That's just an account of the world that we live in. It's a fallen world. It's a world in which we don't ever quite fit because it's a sinful and broken world, a world in which violence and war and famine and sickness and death all happen, none of which are things that really belong to the natural created order. All human beings are refugees because all human beings experience displacement from our primordial home where none of those things were, none of those terrible, horrible, violent things happened, and where we could feel truly at home. None of us is truly at home in the world as it currently is. So, Jesus was displaced to be the faithful representative of Israel because Abraham was displaced. As the second Adam, he experienced displacement like the first Adam, so as to share in the condition of all human beings. And finally, Jesus was displaced because the church is called to refugeehood. What do I mean by that? I don't mean that we're all called to actually become displaced from our countries. I mean, we can't actually choose whether we're displaced or not, right? If we leave out of choice, then we can't be refugees. Nobody chooses to be a refugee. But we can see the church as being addressed as refugees throughout the New Testament. Let's have a look at some of those passages. 1 Peter, I'm in American mode because I'm speaking to you from America and they all talk about 1 Corinthians and 1 Chronicles and 1 Peter. 1 Peter says, to the exiles of the dispersion, I urge you as aliens and exiles. I've put the Greek there in brackets for those of you who love Greek. I've argued in an article called Jesus was a Refugee, Unpacking the Theological Implications. I've argued that these Greek words are translations of the Hebrew word ger, which is very important when you look at all of the Old Testament lore about looking after the ger. You can find that article if you just do a Google search for my name and Jesus was a refugee. But we find that the letter of 1 Peter is actually addressed to the entire church, well, first of all, to the seven churches in Asia Minor, but thematically or theologically, because 1 Peter is in the canon, that means it's addressed to the whole church. Peter sees the church as being exiles. Why? Well, because our citizenship is in heaven. That's what it says in Philippians 3:20. Now, before you want to use N.T. Wright to correct me that we aren't trying to escape earth to go to heaven, I'm aware of all of that and I agree with all of that. I'm not going to try and overturn all of that. Sure, but Paul still says our citizenship is in heaven. What does he mean by that? He means that heaven is where we come from in a certain sense, like the Garden of Eden, right? Earth is not a place where which we can yet call home because of everything wrong that's going on here, because we haven't yet reached the final union of heaven and earth. But this theme of the church as refugees is carried on after the New Testament. The early church all saw themselves as refugees. Here's a few examples of letters written very soon after the New Testament. First Clement to the church of God which sojourns at Rome, to the church of God sojourning at Corinth, to the Church of God sojourning at Philippi, to the Holy Catholic Church of resident aliens everywhere. That's from the martyrdom of Polycarp, the story of the martyrdom of Polycarp. The church embedded in its core sense of identity right from the start saw itself as foreigners, as people who don't belong in the country. We'll see in a second why that's so important. another letter, the Epistle to Diognetus, a beautiful, beautiful letter written again, like just 50 or 60 years after the end of the New Testament. He says this about Christians. Christians dwell in their own countries, but simply as sojourners. As citizens, they share in all things with others, and yet endure all things as if foreigners. Every foreign land is to them as their native country, and every land of their birth as a land of strangers. They pass their days on earth, but they are citizens of heaven. So, to summarize what we've got to in this section, Jesus, as the founder of the church, experienced displacement and thereby set an example to his followers that they understand themselves rightly when they understand themselves as displaced, as refugees. In a sort of metaphysical sense, in a very real sense, I would say in a spiritual sense, but we're always tempted to think of the spiritual as less real than the physical, just because the physical is what we encounter through our senses. Whereas, of course, from a biblical perspective, the spiritual is far more real than the physical. So we can talk about physical refugees, and I don't want to diminish the trauma that being a physical refugee means. In fact, that's part of the whole point, is for us to experience the right level of solidarity and show the right level of solidarity with physical refugees. But I would argue that the church is real refugees if spiritual means real, at least more real than the physical. So it's time to move on from our exegetical discussion. Why was Jesus a refugee? All of these different reasons that Jesus was a refugee from a biblical theology perspective. But let's turn to consider some of the ethical and political implications. What does it mean if we as the church today continue to think of ourselves as foreigners and exiles in the world, as we rightly should, judging from all of the exegesis I've just showed you? Well, for one thing, it makes us see refugees no longer as different from us, but as the same as us, right? And that changes a lot of the rhetoric that you sometimes hear about immigrants, because very often when people are writing about the immigration situation, they use the word we to mean citizens and they to mean immigrants. Here's two examples. There's two books that are concerned about rising levels of immigration. The one on the left is written by an American about America, and the one on the right is written about the UK. Naji Bigger, who was the Regius Chair of Divinity at Oxford until recently. They both said this: we have a problem. And the problem that we have, apparently, is too much immigration. But who's we? It can't be the refugees, right? They have a problem too, but their problem is not that there's too much immigration. Their problem is that they have been forced to flee their country, probably seen their homes burnt down, often separated from their families. Their problem is a really desperate and terrible plight. But for some reason, James Hoffmeyer, Old Testament scholar at TEDS, and Nigel Bigger, Divinity Chair at Oxford, think that the real problem is not that there are over 100 million people who have lost their homes in the world. The real problem is that we comfortable, happy, wealthy Westerners have too many immigrants. I guess you can tell what I think about all of this. But I would just say, if we see ourselves as refugees, like refugees, then they're not different from us anymore. They're the same as us. We're all part of the same family. And the thing is, this is why we need to care for refugees. That's very, very clear from the Bible as well. Look at the book of Exodus. It says, "You shall not wrong or oppress a resident alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt." Now, how many of the Old Testament laws give a because? Normally they're just laws. But here it says, this is why you should be kind to the immigrants. This is why you should be kind to the ger, the refugee, because you should remember what it was like. So that's one thing. We share a common humanity with refugees and a common situation of displacement from the Garden of Eden. And as the church, we should never feel at home in a country. If we're starting to worry about too many immigrants, I suggest this means that we're feeling too at home in our own country. We're starting to imagine that it belongs to us rather than it belongs to God. Finally, self-designation of refugeehood transforms the idea of a Christian nation. What do I mean by a Christian nation? We hear this quite a lot, rise of Christian nationalism. I'm talking about this on my podcast at the moment, which I'll share with you later. What is a Christian nation? Well, it's a refugee nation, according to my exegesis, right? There was an attempt to create a refugee nation back in 2015, by the way, and this would have been its national flag. The attempt failed, but the idea of a refugee nation continued. You think of about a refugee nation, if we really thought of ourselves as a refugee nation, if a Christian nation was a refugee nation, then how could it turn away any refugee who sought entrance? It couldn't, could it? Because they'd already be a citizen by virtue of being a refugee. If you want to learn a little bit more and dig a little bit deeper into this whole question, I've got four books to recommend you. I have them here. The best one, the very best one of these is on the right, Refugee Imagined by Mark and Luke Glanville, the brothers. If you prefer listening to reading, I recommend you go to my podcast, faithatthefrontiers.com, and look up the past series, Series 1, which is on refugees. I've got about 10 or 11 episodes there where I interview experts from around the world, Bible scholars, practitioners, theologians, about how Christians should think about the problem of refugees. Bless you all, and goodbye.